Mr. Cowan's Reel 3. Did you go on route marches in these early weeks?
Oh, yes, I had route marches.
Were they built up in distance, or did you just thrown into it?
No, they were built up in distance. I mean, one week you might have a route march of about 5 miles, and then go the next week a couple of miles more. And so they finish your doing about 50 miles a day, and you have to take your haversack rations with you.
Must have found it difficult with heavy army boots for the first time.
Yes, there was always somebody throwing up with blisters and whatnot this time. But at the same time, you know, you had a pack on your back as well. So I mean, it was a bit awkward. Until you got used to it anyway. I mean, don't forget that most of these guys have never carried a pack on their back in their lives, same as I had. But you should get intervals of a rest every now and again. I mean, they weren't very hard on you, the NCO took you out. It's always a different NCO took you out. They weren't very hard on you. Some had a different type of way to run, but as I said, so I felt sorry for some people because I just hadn't the feet to deal with when the army boots were heavy. I said, but when we all came back after route march, I think my feet was a bit achy, and we told them, why to go and wash my feet and whatnot, and we would check out different things for washing them. But,
were your feet checked? How did they be checked?
Checked after route march. We went and washed them and dried them and come back. And every person was doing a foot inspection by the NCO. And if you complained, you sent a medical FedEx to come and do a defeat, make sure there's no damage done.
If you dropped out through blisters or whatever, what happened to them? I mean, you may be miles away.
Well, if you dropped out with blisters, you said to make that way back, but occasionally, you should send a small van. A medical van, and he said, pick them up. He said, a small medical van. And he said, pick it up. But it wasn't always me, the van. If you didn't expect being those 10 miles and break it down, that was it. He said, try and get a bus back. But I think it was what they call a force march, when you had your full kit and everything in, a medical van used to follow you. That was when you had your kit, your rifles and everything, and all that. That was what the car was called, a force march. But it just always be a medical van.
Did you sing the old army songs on the marches?
Well, that used to get you over the marches, singing all the old army songs. I mean, we told them we wanted to. I mean, there was Spike. We had a sergeant major called Spike. We should go around the battalion and a motorbike sometime. And then I used to say there was Spike riding on his bike to the stores and whatnot. The army still. But it was funny. But the Nazis used to say it, and they said, you should break here. You should break here. They used to say, forget about it, you should plod on.
The regular stops that you have, rest stops, I was told a DLI idea was that you sat at the edge and stuck your feet up in the air. Was this the usual?
No, I wanted to do that. Yeah. But some of the sergeants were very good. They used to stop near a village or even a row of houses so you could maybe get a drink of water. So of course, you actually not drink too much water, yeah, but because if it was a hard day, drink some water. They were very good that way. And at odd times, there was people come that were hard score and whatnot. I had a bit of cake. I had a sandwich for you. And if the sergeant was a good sergeant, well, you should maybe have it, you know. Of course, it depends upon where you were going if you had your own rations. But if you had your own ration, you used to have a van with you with hot tea in containers. That was a standard route march, you know. They used to have a van come out. The sergeant used to tell them how many miles they'd be, where they'd be staying. At a certain time, and up would come the van with two containers of hot tea in it. That was really easy to get there. A tiffin, what they call a tiffin. A bit of bait you carry with you. So it was all arranged, like, you know. I didn't suffer much.
Was the army putting in the tea at that time, this bromide that seemed to be very prevalent at one time?
I'm not on the side of you. still affected me.
I've known some that have mentioned that.
Yes, I've heard it here with the foot of the neighbours. I never got to know for sure, like, and I knew one or two army killings, those things, open the kit in there and the candy and the candies and the kit and things, and the cookhouses. But never got to give me the right answer for it.
When you carried your own rations with you, what might they be?
Well, it could be a sandwich and an apple. I say a sandwich. I don't know, a sandwich and a very little pastry or something. An apple or an orange, whichever case may be. I've seen them have a banana in. But it wasn't bad. I mean, because when you went to a tiffin, if you're at the back of Wellington, you might get a tiffin. You might have a tin of fish between so many men. I've seen that being in an army ration when you went in a route march. They caught the side or they might have a chap carrying so many tins of fish on. You see a tin of fish and you said the bed as well, that they had to spend their bed. So it was tin of fish. I think that's how I've used the tin of fish, mate. That's a leg. That's the bit at home.
What did you carry in your pack?
Well, you should carry towels, soap, towels, your mess tins and all things like that, what you use through the day. You pack in your bag. Wasn't a very big pack, you know, but it's always a... Well, sometimes we should have a packet, a pair of pencils in the pack as well. But you should have to fill the pack with. Never like this, you say, in an army. It's a film for the students that was all brought away. I never did mine for the students. So, we should get a bit.
Did you have field training outside the village?
Yes, we used to go out and ski through the night, through the day and night, take our tents and dig a trench, go into these schemes, looking at different ranges and finding out how you can read a map and whatnot. And if you're then days, by the time you got 2 or 3 weeks, different people were giving the maps. Like I was getting that, so I think really the son gave me the map and I said, so and so, a bunch of tall cop training with the distances, you know, yes, you said, give the distance of it. And we'll see, we'll dig with trenches and sleep all night in the trench. Yes, the weather was fine. We used to have a tent in case it rained, like with the. On ocean rock slopes and new glacier slopes. That's where we used to do our schemes. Bushy top trees, 2,000 feet or higher. This up there, always different things where you learned.
It's pretty hard countryside, isn't it?
It's hard countryside, yes. Mm-hmm.
And you would be doing this at that time, on that winter again of 1940.
Oh, yeah, that wasn't still a good weather, it was still inclement weather. Yes. The worst part of the thing was when about they did a big in the federal where we started doing the guards and whatnot. Guards in the guard house and the HQ. When was the nice to do that was when you learned how to do guards properly, you know.
Did as part of your field training were you doing attacking and defending?
Oh yes.
At that time, again, very early in the war, early 1940s, what was the usual general method of attacking and defending? That they were teaching you.
They were teaching different ways that the enemy would be coming. And also, they should train at the same time bayonet practicing. Which you had your dummies, bayonet practicing, dummies for field training and whatnot. So the dummy came very handy by your bayonet practicing. So, occasionally, you have one platoon against another, one being the enemy and one being the British. And that way, we should find out how to deploy our. Different soldiers was put that was looking good in a training, was put in part of different 6 or 7 groups of the platoon, the section, you see, and they were given sections of the platoon. You see, you walk out how to attack the other platoons and whatnot. And that was more reality than anything.
Was it still old First World War training, you know, get out with your bayonets and walk across another line?
Oh, yes, that was one of the training. If you never came across you, you get the bayonets in. But more so, you'll use your bayonets on your own defence. Take the bayonet and pull it out, bring it in your butt end up for cutting somebody's jaw or skull. That's what I would say. It's all around bayonet training, not just for an attack.
Was it basic fire and movement when attacking, when operating as an attacking force that they were teaching you? Were they teaching infiltration or flanking and this kind of thing?
Yes.
So it wasn't the kind of a trench mentality.
No,
it was more than that.
I mean, you're learning the trenches how to defend it, how to fight from trenches, how to get out of trenches and whatnot. But mostly flanking and different things. You see, we had so much to get through in such a short time. There's a lot of things came on top of each other. And you had your physical training on top of that every day. That came as every day. That every day, you see.
Was that an immediate thing after...
After
or before breakfast?
I was taking early morning. Unless you were going through the different skills of gym or vault or pause, maybe you should go to the gym for that. But that was only an intermediate. But every morning was physical training.
Did that include cross-country running?
Oh, yes, sir. Oh, yes.
Irrespective of the conditions?
Yes, irrespective, yes. Back blue with the cold.
You must have been getting pretty fit.
Oh, I was fit. After three weeks, even I was... I mean, I used to play football and whatnot. I was fit then. Well, I was more than fit after 3 weeks. More than fit.
Do you think that the... army philosophy for a recruit coming in from civvy street, like as you were and others were, was to kind of shut that element of home out of your life?
Close it off altogether. Just forget all about home life. After 3 weeks, I've got a high home.
But there must have been some men who found that very difficult.
It was one of the odd ones. It's something to break bones and go home, but of course, they used to get put under charge and get CV, complaints of violence and whatnot. And if it was too bad, they used to get sent to the castle hold them up in the castle.
Was there initial homesickness, do you know?
There was at first. I must admit, I had a little touch of it myself. I mean, I think I'd be home friend and whatnot. But I think after about a fortnight, I think they might have homesickness. When I realised I had to stop there. And I had a good son, he had a good talk to me one day, he says, you're doing well. He just says, it's his man, different times. He used to call you by yourself and say different things, you know. Never said talk to him. He said, the fact that your children doing fine, you're doing all right, lads, keep this and the other, and you get on your own. He said, look, you're doing fine, do it. He also said, I've been honest for many years, and this and the other. If you want to get ahead, get stripes, and you're always right. He said there's different things. And I just took over from him. I just thought, well, to be in the army, there was nobody to know, they're going to stop us. I was on the wing, so I just took it.
You accepted it.
I accepted it. I just took it.
Can we look at the guards that you mentioned? How long had you been in the army to be considered ready for doing a guard duty?
It comes to after a fortnight there, I mean, the regular soldiers and the cooks and that, and then they're going to be doing the guard, but they want to do the guard as soon as possible. That's why I got so many drills for the rifle and whatnot.
Can you take me through a guard mounting preparation for guard itself?
Well, you should pick so many of the platoons. My platoon might be the lance corporal and six men, and it's to march up to HQ, spit and polish everything, used to be. And the great coat on everything, and a rifle, and your packs and whatnot. You said, march up the HQ. There you would be inspected by the orderly officer. He was going to be orderly officer for 24 hours. Or 12 hours, sorry, 12, 24 hours or 12 hours. But anyway, he inspected you, and you marched to whatever you're marching, the guard room or the HQ, because both was on the guard. And then you were changed over with the guard there. There was a choke. Before we marched there, the guard and the guard that was going to retain at the guard room was marched out to receive you coming in. And when he got there, you're handed over by the orderly sergeant to the corporal, and the corporal is to detain you for two, separate twos. You should be read the rules against you, you should be marched into the place, and two should be left to change over the two it was on. And it was marched back and forth, yeah, do these ones really marching on. And then when you got back to the guard room, the corporal sergeant was there in charge, maybe a sergeant charge you. You should have the guard listen from the guard officer. You should tell you who was on. You should draw for who was going to go on. Of course, nearly everyone was on 6 o'clock at night. It was 6 to 8, 8 to 10, 10 to 12. 12 to 2, 2 to 4, and 4 to 6. You should come up at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's when the regimental police took over. And you should always worry about getting on the turn. You said, I should like a light turn. If you get the light turn, all right. We said, when you're on the guard room, you had all the rules and regulations of what that would do. But to be on, when you slept all this, all the kit on, and be in a split second, a split minute, to be it when all the others came down, if he came down, which he did nearly always.
And you would never know for sure when he would come?
Sure, no, never ten. You may be outside and you're doing your 2 hours, or you may be, just have come off and got in your pack, on your sleeping pallet. You should always be ready to turn out what the trouble was. Turn out the guard, you have to come and say, turn out the guard, or a sergeant who caught you, you should turn you out, and then you're with the 2 guards at the zone. You'll be inspected, probably to make sure you're all right. You might be able to inspect your rifle, whatever the case may be, and then you were dismounted, and you went back to duty the same day, and that was it.
And the turnout had to be of a high quality?
High quality, yes, the audience had to be spot on. You asked different questions about what you had to do, and you don't know what you were doing. You weren't just sort of, at first you weren't too bad again. If you did struggle on one or two things, the audience was very good. It was when I had been in 4 or 5 weeks. But you should come with different questions every time to certain ones, and you should be on their tools to tell them what you want. Why you want to have what you want.
Did they inspect the soles of your boots as well as the boots themselves in the initial guard inspection?
I already had my Swiss Army men boots inspected once, I think, and that was on the big one later. But, they inspected your kit and everything, your trousers and your gaiters. Because then there was putties. We had putties.
We had putties then?
We had putties then. We didn't have gaiters to get on.
What was it like putting putties on? Was it a difficult job?
It was difficult at first. Once you, it was like bandaging somebody's wrist or something like that. Once you put it on, you have to make sure the end had to go in a certain way so they wouldn't come loose, because it was just tucked in. If you're flinging your arms, your legs are going to be over here. You know, even when you were running, it came, it caught everybody, I think, after them. And then later on, the gate comes.
You would be taught how to challenge when on guard, were you?
Oh, yes. You were taught that long before you went on guard. Actually, you were taught that my Rangers and I got me doing the on guard with the business fighting and whatnot. You tell you how to go on guard. But you were given that in a drill, a special drill, that when you were marching your life.
And what was the challenge when on guard? If someone had some problem?
The corporal goes there, and then you should be given a name before you went on guard. The password maybe swordfish or something like that. If he couldn't answer swordfish, that was it. And she could halt him. She could call the guard out then.
Did you have live ammunition with you for guard duty?
Yes.
Even at that initial time?
Yes, live ammunition.
What were you guarding in Wellington?
We were going prisoners and just the HQ for that was what we were going into the guardhouse.
Did you do any gas precautions?
Oh yes, you went to a gas precaution. You went to I'm trying to think of the place you went for gas precautions. There was a place set up somewhere. There were one of the battalions, one of our units, where they took you to the gas field, one or two guys every week. When you're close and you're starting. But when you went to the actual gas, there was a gas, which had this place with a big long wooden hood. And they were told by the gas sergeant. Of course, we had a gas sergeant, who was the same one. He said, well, this is a test again. He said, the gas sergeant was the one. He to go and go and see, tell you what they expect and put their gas in, and we might get in with this, these gas bombs, but proper gas that we don't want. I don't know what they call the gas nowadays, but they went through this long. You said to start stopping there so many minutes, and I've heard many road shell be out, or gas be out. Of course, you've got a lot of roads that was fighting, that's all. But I think everybody went in at first was a bit apprehensive of what was going to happen, because they didn't know what they were going to fling in the hut. But they were proved all right, maybe once or twice, and that part of it.
And you had to have to take your gas mask off at one point.
You had to take your gas mask off and finally what the gas would smell like, you know, it's not near to make your eyes water, but it gave you a chance to smell of what it was. So you knew what to expect.
And the reason why you wear a mask.
Because you see, some of the blokes were having a proper mask here. How the hell is all these local masks going to take all this? And you look like the right. Maybe you walk about the street, you have local gas mask on, and that all the lads had a proper gas mask on. But it didn't take many days before we all got them. Just had another placement.
What was army food like?
Well, sometimes it was good and sometimes it was bad, put that way. But once you got used to army food, then you would expect sugar.
What might you get for breakfast?
Well, sometimes there was always porridge, whether it was oil or not. There was kippers. There was egg. Dried egg. Dried egg and beans or something like that. Sausage and beans, you know, part of the same thing for years and years.
Tea and bread.
Tea and bread. I always like the bread and butter and tea, yeah. And the same for dinners, you get your dinners just consisted of different things. What you can use, minces and dumplings and different minces and patties and whatever, just at the same.
It was a meat meal in the midday.
We're sweet, like a crow, sweet. From Griffin, but it was always a sweet. And then tea was always as I say, maybe fish again, something like that. And you might at least get a fresh egg if you're lucky. At least you get some fresh eggs there. Maybe once or twice a week. And then again, it was some meat for your tea, cheese. That
was
good.
Was there a canteen in Wellington?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Where you would go to buy the naffy.
Yeah.
Could you take me through the routine of a typical day? What time was Reveille?
7:15.
Was that by bugle or?
Bugle. Yeah.
And you immediately got up, what did you do?
Yeah, you got up and Most lads went for abolitions first, and then when you come to abolitions, you used to do your bed, do as much as you could before you're called up for PT. But if you're called up for PT before your abolitions, maybe called up for PT before abolitions, depends upon the cells and whatnot. But then you went, as I say, you used to quick get up, go to abolitions, try and get shear wash and shear the best you can. And come back and get as much as you under the bed before you call you for PT or vice or those that do when you come back. But that was the start of your morning.
Did you have hot water?
Occasionally. And then after that, it was breakfast, march up to breakfast.
Was that a cafeteria system of lining up and with your plates or discs?
We all sat on these big tables. It was usually about 20 or 30. These wooden tables, two sides of the table, and then they come along with the stuff and put on the edge of the table. You should pass it down to the table. Pass it down like 2 miles, semicolon, and pass it down the table. And it was table, we were like that all the time in the room.
How did you wash your utensils that you'd use, your knife, fork, spoons, and whatever?
As you went out, it was just have two hot bottles, great big hot bottles. Hot bottles with hot water in. You should dip your plate in there, because we have the tin plates and all that. on the weekends, you really make them feel like that. And usually just dip your plate in a hot plate, and wash it clean, and just sit on the water all the plate. And we learned to keep a lumber rag for drying them. And they always told us, one way or another, got a towel, or a hand towel, and kept it handy, simply, so when you went back the end of it, you could clean it. They're making your name for all of them. Totally to be self-sufficient and self-cleaning and self-assertive. Do it all yourself, you know. Once you're going to have a habit of being clean. I still do, I still wash your clean, I finish your dinner now. I
after lunch, what might you do?
Well, if you go back to the table, you might have a half an hour to yourself. To the next, it might be wet, and clean, it might be drill again, or it might be map reading, could be anything. You should get maybe three lessons or something in the afternoon until they finish about 4:30.
Actually, I made a mistake there. I should have said after breakfast, what do you do? So you've said basically what you say in the afternoon. What would you do in the morning after breakfast?
Well, I use my body do it. I said we have to clean up, and about 9 o'clock, we could call up for what was on agenda for today. It could be a platoon going on a march, or it could be a weapon training, or it could be drill. Anything appertaining to some part of the service, you do. That's what you say. You do different things each day. Sometimes with their own sergeant and corporal, different days with other sergeants, you know. Specialist sergeant, I've called them specialists.
Did you have a break in the mid-morning and mid-afternoon?
Yes, we did, yes. Mm-hmm.
And did you get the opportunity for a drink of something,
yes,
or did you?
Yeah. I'm trying to think, well, once you know, but it's some place that made for a nappy, I think. I think it was a class of the dining hall, was a place made to go there, because we had a proper nappy there, you know, them days.
How long might that break be? So after you'd had your tea and you'd gone through the afternoon session, and after you had your tea, was your time your own thereafter?
Yes, your time was your own thing, especially the swap and something like that.
But presumably, a lot of that time would take up with cleaning up for next day.
Oh yes, let's say I myself and one or two we made it so load in your mind, and when you come back, if you're off. It was far easier doing it then. It was, if you want to go to an island, it's far easier doing it with children. And I do work my weapon, I work packs, I work boots, or anything that we do, and then go over the night time. Or in my case, the other one I should do is sweat over. I've got some pamphlets of the sergeant, drill pamphlets and another pamphlet, and I shall read them so I'll do it. So that's up to the training. But I should go for a drink. And then we just have some good time to mountain. People like that say, you should go to Paul Mountain. Before you enter the bar, the minute was in. But all that, put your money away, you know. Very, very good. You should always buy the drinks first. You would offer to buy them drinks, you know. They were very, very good. Because they were all pitmen employed at Pitch, you see. And the women folks, it was a sad sunlight. To be a sing song. If it had a couple days, they were sing song. It was okay. And you may get one thing soon. Where are you going to come from here? What time are you going to be in for? 11 o'clock. We'll have a home and 10 o'clock we'll send our post and have a bite to eat. We should go and have a bite to eat. People help. It happened regularly. Didn't know where you were at.
Were you allowed out, in effect, from the very beginning, or did you have to do a period where you weren't allowed to go out?
We weren't allowed out for 2 or 3 days at night. As I say, that time was a bit of a row when the dining hall was somebody went out to and the police called him. But on the whole, there wasn't very much trouble with the union. I didn't see the regiment police doing the damage.
And would you have to be well turned out before you're allowed out?
Oh, yes, sir. If the police saw you wearing your hat on one side, you weren't supposed to wear the DLI hat on one side. Right in the middle of your forehead. It's fascinating. You wonder whether they would call him Tally or nothing like that. He said that battle just turned into the neck and whatnot. So they'll be smart. You get this, you put your hat on guns. Lovely man. But the regiment police would go up and down the streets on the road. So it kept you on your job, kept you on your job.